Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast, the podcast about the beautiful club within the beautiful game. It's our second one in a row in the Gladstone. It's the same night, coincidentally. Who would have known? And this one is our transfer special. We are sitting here on Wednesday evening talking about all that's gone before, all that's gone on today, and all that might go on in the next 24 hours or so. I will update this, or possibly we will update this, Peter, won't we, on around about Thursday, Friday time, if and when any spectacular new signings have befallen the club. If any at all. How are you feeling?
I've got two comments on that. I'm worried that any of these transfers have fallen the L wheel. I mean, that sounds like a quite ominous rather than actually being a good thing. And all the good things happen, all the stuff that happened today won't take very long. So far,
yes.
There's been a lot of rumour, a lot of random...
There's a spoof about assigning some 16-year-old seem to be a joke online.
A lot of suggestions of, you know, we might get Chilean because our Argentinian youngster was like, the club's changed their mind. And Nothing's actually happened. So It looks like we're going down to the end again for the last day. And do we sign Billy Gilmore? Do we sign a striker? Do we sign you or me? You know, is it the chance, you know, for us?
If they're looking for numbers,
and
willing to pay...
We can have a number.
Premier League crisis. I'm willing to go for it.
Just before we go any further, I'm actually available on Friday as well. So once the window's closed, I haven't got a club currently.
That's right. So you're available on.
My agent told me I should accept nothing less than £50,000 a week. So, no.
Is that me? I'm the agent, aren't I?
Yeah. You're getting like 50% of my money.
Vice versa.
I mean, to be fair, you can get £50,000 a week. I'd give you 50% of that. To be honest.
Could represent each other, couldn't we, Peter? Yeah.
I think it'd be a good deal.
Well, I've moved on to the 10% beer, so this is going to go well, isn't it?
It's probably not the ideal diet to have before a Premier League move.
Old school, 70s.
I'm hoping Billy Gilmore's not drinking that tonight, and his face should potentially move into us tomorrow.
Well, we have been linked with him, haven't we, Billy Gilmore?
Yeah.
Midfield, that could be interesting, actually. I think if we did go for him, he's one of those guys whose career stalled. He's kind of well known, so it's not the type we'd normally go for. But I think the fact is, career stalled. He's gone under the radar, off the radar a little bit. He was on loan at Norwich, and they didn't really play him, and it just didn't work out at all for them. And they were struggling anyway. Maybe
I think struggling's an understatement.
A little bit, yeah. Graham Potter and him—that could be the match made in heaven.
It could be. I think it could be really good. And he obviously has a lot. You know, he's obviously really high regarded at Chelsea. Teacher's come in, he's not necessarily feels the same for whatever reason.
Yeah.
There was some comment last night, allegedly, that he said there were no other options when they were losing Southampton when he was almost on the bench. So, Jesse's not that in his thoughts. So, I think it could be, it's an interesting move ahead as well, given there's a fair chance at some point over the next year or two we'll lose Casado.
Yeah.
The idea of Gilmore being around the team till then and maybe coming through Kozlowski as well, because they've been on loan this season. So, there's the future-proofing already, hopefully, in place because, I mean, I wouldn't even rule out if he carries on this form and then does well in the World Cup, especially against England if they get through and play England in the second round, that Casado could be got in January. I mean, he's that good. The issue at the moment is that no one's going to pay the money that we want it after 12 games Premier League or 13 in Premier League. But if he carries on for half a season or a whole season and has a good World Cup, then...
then they might pay the money,
Yeah, I
maintain there's absolutely no
chance.
He's
worth the money.
There's no chance he's going.
No, he's no chance he's going tomorrow, no.
Yeah. But who we get in? Billy Gilmore's an interesting one. I actually like the idea of that.
Yeah. But I don't think it'll be that big a fee. I think it'll be like, you know, 10 million in short stint, which...
yeah, with some
it sounds ridiculous
maybe.
To say it's not having a fee, but compared
as long
to
as there's no buyback bullshit, I don't think there will be, because I don't think we'll...
I'd rather pay a bit more and not have that.
Yeah, and they probably would cut their losses to some degree, wouldn't they, Chelsea, at this stage?
I think. Well, he seems to be quite a way off their midfield at the moment, and they've got
to come
through.
Yeah, as you said, that we haven't got any other options.
Yeah.
He's fully fit and ready to go, and he's not being considered.
He was on the bench, and they didn't even suggest him as an option to come on. Yeah, that was like, so
that's pretty harsh, isn't it, actually, to be honest.
It's hardly going to improve his morale. So if we can get him, I'd be quite... and a striker, I'd be very happy tomorrow, generally.
Yeah, striker, definitely. Ben Brereton Diaz or other, I'd be happy with somebody who...
Barrow, is it seems from Bologna, seems to be the...
What's the deal with him? Barrow doesn't sound very Italian, so I'm assuming he's not an Italian player.
He's Gambian, I think, originally.
Gambian, yeah,
like
I thought so. Thought he might be. Because he's got more of an exotic first name, so, yeah. Okay, well, he could be interesting.
It would be better if he was called Bob Barrow, that would be quite good. Or Will Barrow, would be quite funny.
Will Barrow. Yeah, that would be interesting. Who knows? I don't know anything about him. Buonanotte, apparently, this seems to have gone... it's dead in the water. South American screwing around with prices, we're hearing, might be...
yeah, the one issue from their point of view is that they're suggesting they're offering a new deal, but it's that from the quote I read from his agent was that he's very unhappy, and so
could he engineer a move?
Yeah, well, exactly. And I wonder if we offer him a longer... we offer them back on loan longer, offer a year and a bit on loan there, or a little bit more money, or a slightly bigger sell on. Who knows? But yeah, at the moment it seems dead. But it's not a deal that dies on Friday as well, because he was never going to come to us this window anyway. So we can we can still be in discussion with them if he refuses to sign.
17-year-old prospect, isn't he?
Yeah. So it's one that will stay open even without the window being open, because we were never looking to have him come over here at this point. So.
This window, we've had the curiosity of the Colwell deal, where we've brought in a loanee, which is not our usual policy nowadays, developing other people's players, unless there's some deal behind the scenes. It seems as if it facilitated or helped oil the wheels for the move for Cucurella. We're not paying a loan fee for him, apparently. Other clubs, and there were a number of them in for him, would have had to have paid a loan fee and the wages. And I think we've got a good deal as it stands, but ultimately we are still developing another club's player, unless there's some meat on the bone there in terms of getting a deal over the line. I don't know if there's any agreements in place, but we haven't seen much of him, so it's a bit hard to say. But would you be satisfied if, for example, we step things up and try to buy him, either in this window or later on down the line?
I don't think it'll be this window, otherwise there'll be no point in, no logic to him doing that. But I mean, Tuchel doesn't seem that keen on playing certain, you know, players who are young players and that sort of thing.
He doesn't like that notion of
Mourinho,
players.
His own players, but...
Potter, sorry. You're talking about
Tuchel, yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
Tuchel doesn't seem that keen on bringing through young players. He seems very much keen on playing players like Thiago Silva, who is obviously about 103 or something, isn't he, or something like that. So, I thought... Colwell did well when he came on at weekend. I thought against Leeds, he looked decent. And given the reputation that he came from Huddersfield on, and he looked good, I would have said been very happy if we signed a Huddersfield player who was that level.
As I said, several people were in for him on loan.
Yeah,
he looked good at Forest Green.
Well, I hope it's almost in a way that they can that you know he likes it here and wants to stay. And Chelsea aren't going to give him a future, so he only wants to come to us. That's our hope. I think we could do it refreshing our defence. I mean, Van Heck is another one I really would like to see us keep on, because at the moment we've got, you know, Duncan, Beltman are both, you know, in their 30s already. You know, Webster, I think, should be the defender who stays for a while. It's like the one who's like, he leads the team, becomes captain, I think, once Duncan maybe isn't supposed to play much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so regular. But I think, Duncan and Beltman are eventually going to, like, you know, maybe a couple of years' time. But we need someone between, like, the really young players like Turns and people like that who are going to, like, kind of, you know, bridge the gap whether it's signing someone or whether it's keeping he's different, or bringing through Van Hecker or whatever. You need something in the middle. And
are you subscribing to the notion that we need another defender anyway on top of that, either a full back or centre back or a flexible player that could play in more than one role?
I'm on the wall. I was definitely stroked for that once it looked like Van Hek was going on loan, no question. At the moment, they seem to be getting away with March and Lamptey between them, mainly March, and then Lamptey coming on a right wing back, and they've got a super on left back wing back, and they've got the options of Trossard's been there, and they've got the option that, March can move on to the left as well. So if Colwill and Van Hek are options, I think they can probably just about get away with it. I'd probably rather they have one more actual option, but I think March has probably got himself to the point where he can't be picked outside of wing back, though. His final third contribution in terms of goals, especially, is not enough to be picked in the front three or four, which is what he used to be in.
It's been too poor for too long, hasn't it?
Yeah,
now? I think it's got.
You can get away with it as wing back.
He's only, he's got Graham Potter coaching him for a period of time now. It's not as if there's any more to come from him. I think we've got to resign ourselves to the fact he is what we're seeing.
Given
he's a good score player, he can do certain things within the squad. But his end product is going to let him
As a wing back, you can get away with that, I think. There's an argument. Yeah. He's decent defensively. If we started playing other players at wing back and played him further forward, I think we'd...
That then becomes a position you're looking to strengthen.
Yeah. Well, especially considering that Welbeck's not really getting any chances, so you need your midfield and around him to score.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Then he's not going to do that. So I think we have to... He is a wing back now. There's no question about it. Yeah. Or even a left back last night. We were near left back, right back in the end. Left back, wasn't he, in the end?
Yeah.
He's not an attacking player.
Yep.
Because he doesn't... Yeah, the contribution in the final third becomes more of an issue in that situation. It still should be better, really, I think, from wing-back.
Yeah.
The chances he had the last two games before yesterday. I don't actually blame him for the header at Fulham, but the one-on-one at against Leeds and the chance at the header at West Ham were both gilt-edged chances and should have been taken.
Yeah.
To not take either of them as well.
It's an anomaly. Somebody said, I think it was Robin said on our WhatsApp group, he's one of the most frustrating players. Because you could see all the talent there. He looks the part, doesn't he? On the ball.
I
don't think he believes it. Yeah, I think you're right.
I never thought he was going to score against Leeds when he went through. He never looked like he was like... Trossard against West Ham. I know Trossard had one or two chances against Leeds as well. But Trossard against West Ham looked like he believed he was going to score from the moment he went through.
Yeah, and so did we.
Yeah.
And it does correlate, doesn't it?
Yeah. Whereas March never looked like he was that happy against... He wasn't sure whether to try and go round the keeper or to try and kick it, chip it over him or...
Yeah.
Slot it round him, whatever. He wasn't that sure. And in fairness, Melier did well. But he gave... I think his final touch was enough ahead that then Melier had a chance to come out nearer to him.
Yeah.
It was too far ahead of him.
Yeah.
If he kept it more under control, he'd probably had more chance to dink it over him, whatever. Or
any more signings you think we need to make beyond... Let's say we get a striker. Let's say we get some kind of defensive colour. And maybe we go for Billy Gilmore for the future.
Well, I don't think there'll be a defender tomorrow, I think.
No. Is there anything beyond that, though?
In an ideal world, we'd have another goalkeeper. Possibly a second goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Ahead of Steele, potentially.
Yeah.
To challenge Sanchez, because, he has moments. Last night he had a moment where he almost absolutely gifted a goal. In a way, someone having actually challenging him, and hopefully longer term, the plan is that one of Sherpin or Rushworth or both will really challenge him, or Sanchez moves on. They've got those two coming through.
Yeah,
probably Rushworth at the moment.
Yeah,
it seems to be the
one. Last weekend he saved one with his face. I don't even knew much about it, but he stood strong and it went.
Yeah, he
flying
seems to be
off.
The one who. I mean, Sherpin, you begin to wonder why we signed him. Really, he's like. We've loaned him to a team who are terrible in Holland from the town of it. Vitesse Arnhem having a dreadful start to the season. And I understand, I mean, obviously it didn't do Cafedo much harm, but as a goalkeeper, you don't want to be kind of like conceding threes and fours every week. It might be good that you make more saves, but also it's not going to be good for your confidence to constantly concede that many goals.
Yeah.
So you wonder why, whether we've given up almost on him already or something.
Yeah. I'm hoping Rushworth will do all right at Lincoln as the other option to Sherpin. Yeah. I conceded, I think it was two or three at the weekend, was it? One of the games recently. Against Peterborough. And I think he's still learning. One of the goals he conceded I thought we could have done better with. But as a guy, we'll let him get out, make his mistakes. Ben White did that as well, didn't
Sanchez, he? Sanchez,
yeah. Still does, actually. We didn't mention the Fulham game. He did make one massive contact, didn't he, Sanchez? Which nearly led to a goal, which
right after
Bobby
we went 2-1.
Or somebody just clipped.
Cabano, wasn't it?
Cabano, yeah.
Clipped right it. After we went, 2-1. Yeah. That got back to 2-1, and we would have been like 3-1 straight away.
Yeah, that could have killed us at the moment.
I mean, mistake is probably the right word, but then I think it did spin an awful lot, and it was quite a.
He's trying to pad it out two-handed. Or maybe cricket.
It was quite an awkward ball because it kind of deflected off one of our. It was defending from our side and kind of spun quite a lot, and so it was a quite difficult one.
Yeah,
but I mean, it would have been down. It's not a good. Sanchez is, I think, in a lot of ways, is a brilliant goalkeeper, and he will go on to become Spain's number one at some point. I'm pretty confident. Mm. But he still has, even at his age, and keepers like mature even later than professional footballers. You know, he's 24. Keepers probably mature to their best to like 32, sort of thing. So he's been superb for us since he's come in, generally. And I was a big fan of Matty Ryan, but Sanchez has been so much better in a lot of ways. Like, so much more dominating in the box, and so much. He's a really good shot as well. His distribution is fantastic.
I know people
moan about it, but. Two of those goals, for example, last year at Liverpool and at home to Man U, came from incredible kicks from him, and his clearances are really good, and he
was it him that started the move Forest Green, right? No, that was Mitchell. Yeah, that would have been Steel, wouldn't it?
Was that Man U one where it was offside? Was that from him as well?
Oh, that might be one thing. Yeah,
where he was wrongly called offside would have been through. Came from him, I think, pretty much. But he's a really good first line of our, in terms of passing. He's a really good defender, keeper, and his positioning's really good, I think, generally. So, he makes the odd error, but, it is what it is. He's a brilliant keeper, but I think it would be great. I mean, it's never great to have a second keeper rather than two keepers.
Yeah.
And I understand that no keeper who's that good probably going to want to come to Brighton as second keeper, but you should then be able to, if it did come to it, what happens if Sanchez is again, you come back to, Sunday against Leicester, we've not signed anyone else. What are the positions that you really worry about if someone ends up out for the whole of the rest of the transfer window? Probably Sanchez and Welbeck.
Sanchez, Welbeck, and Caicedo, I would say. Not so much Caicedo.
You can cover Caicedo more. It.
Alzate
would do a job there. People would do a job.
I think it would get thinner, but the main ones.
We wouldn't be as good then.
Sanchez and Welbeck.
But any of your first team players don't get injured, you wouldn't be as good.
Yeah.
But those are the two who are. Hopefully, we will cover Sanchez tomorrow and cover Welbeck tomorrow. We won't cover Sanchez because there's no way.
Well, one place that has been weakened, at least for now, until he gets into his stride more, is the left back with Estupiñán. Stupinian is coming in. Mark Kikareya went out. Now, he's the most expensive right back in history. Sorry, the most expensive left back in history. He's number 8 now on the list of most expensive defenders of all time, Peter, because, of course, Slab had himself, or Crabface, as my wife calls him, Harry Maguire, is still the most expensive at 80 million. Van Dijk is at 75. Now, Wesley Fofana has now signed, finally, for Chelsea from Leicester after being sitting around on the sidelines and clearly not wanting to play anymore. He's in at about the same price as Van Dijk. Fourth on the list, Matthias De Ligt, who went from Juve to Bayern Munich, 68 mil.
They were delicious about that.
Very nice. Please leave the room now. After that joke, right. Lucas Hernandez went from Atletico to Bayern Munich for 68 mil. Matthias De Ligt, again, 67 mil from Ajax to Juventus, interestingly. So either there's two Matthias De Ligt.
No, it's the same. He went this summer.
Yeah. I know. I'm just building it up. Ruben Dias.
Double Dillet.
Ruben Dias. Man City were willing to spend money on defenders back then. They spent 65 million on him. They didn't want to spend anywhere near that on Mark Kukurea, so he ended up going for the proper price of about 63 million. It says 62 million on this info, but that's wrong. 55 rising to 63, they reckon. And then you've got Aymeric Laporte, 57 mil. Lisandro Martinez, the shortest centre-back in history, 55 mil. And a certain Mr. Ben White, who's just dropped out of our top 10, thanks to the Fofana signing, was 50 million Brighton to Arsenal. When Arsenal said, let's go for this price, and we said no, 50 million. They went for a new price, we said no, 50 million. That went on for about 15 to 20 hours. And eventually they come to the exact price we told them.
In 15, 20 years, I think, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And Leeds developed him anyway, so what the hell. So
he also got like about 25 million in a payoff, you know.
So in a very convoluted way, what I'm saying is Mark Cucurella has gone out to Chelsea. He's one of a very large number of Albion players who have left the club this summer. Namely 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. I've got 18 players listed here, and I think it's out of date by one or two. This has Mark Cucurella to Chelsea, Yves Bissouma to Tottenham, as we all know, Leo Ostergaard to Napoli, Shane Duffy to Fulham, that's a loan, but it's, you know, he's out of contract, isn't he, afterwards. We've talked about Kjell Scherpen, who's gone to Vitesse Arnhem on loan. Simon Adingra, who we signed in, has gone straight out to Royal Union Saint-Gilloise in Belgium. Aaron Connolly has gone to the discerning Italian culture capital of Venezia. Andy Zakiri, out on loan again as well. He's gone to Basel. Mikhail Kabovnik has gone this time to Fortuna Dusseldorf. We'll talk maybe a bit more about him in a minute. Abdallah Sima, who was on loan to Stoke and got injuries last season, has gone to Angers on loan. Alex Cochran has gone to Hearts. Taylor Richards has gone to Queen's Park Rangers. That's a permanent deal, isn't it? I believe.
No, it's loan.
Oh, is that a loan? Loan with permanent, yeah. Reda Kadra gone to Sheffield United. He's got an injury, but he's out there at the moment. And we also have Hayden Roberts to Derby. Simon Rushworth was supposed to go there too, but he ended up going
Carl
to
Luton.
Sorry, Carl Rushworth.
Who's Simon Rushworth?
I don't know. He sounds okay, doesn't he? Is his brother? He was supposed to have gone with Hayden Roberts to Derby, but he's gone to Lincoln.
He's got from the way.
Jensen Weir's gone to Morecambe. He did all right, actually. Scored a good goal the other week. He's on loan there in League One. Morecambe struggling, though, again. Teddy Jenks. He's gone to Crawley. Now, they've got an interesting new ownership thing with Bitcoin crap and all that bollocks, NFTs and all that jazz.
Not working out well so far.
Not working out well. They've got a new coach in Kevin Betsy. It's a coaching partnership.
They bought the top striker from the league last year in Telford.
Yeah,
and
Dominic Telford.
And they're not doing very well since then.
And they're bottom two or three. Interesting. Early days. I think they're going to give them time. I heard an interview with the owner of Crawley the other day, and it does sound like they're, you know, it's a work in progress. But
yeah,
early
also
days.
A bit of a bad publicity last year, so they're trying to build up from that and improve themselves from that, aren't they?
Exactly. But as far as Teddy Jenks goes, we wish him the best. He's looked good when he's made appearances for 23s, League Cup matches.
Nothing last year, though. You wonder with Jenks and Weir whether they're both going to be.
Is that they're not being used in the right way again, or is
they're
it
not good enough?
They're not quite good enough? Probably the latter, isn't it? And Mark Leonard was one I missed. Had gone to Northampton, who are a promising side in League Two this season.
Not that promising in the most unfortunate fashion last year.
Oh, that was incredible, wasn't it? Was it them that they lost to Bristol Rovers due to a crazy goal swing?
Yeah.
And
they still won 3-1 the last time like that, and then Barrow's goal against them.
Bristol Rovers won
8-0 7-0, and eventually Barton went up.
They were only in the top three for 10 minutes at the end of the season.
They were bottom like six at Christmas like that.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to them, they did well, but nonetheless. So that's the signings on there. Now, of course, since that was published, I've just been reading from
we've got the
Neil Morpay is gone as well, of course.
We've got at least four or five signings tomorrow that will go out on loan. Yeah. So, that'll be more.
So we're talking well into the 20s here.
Yeah.
Because Morpay's gone.
No doubt we're going to sign like five players an hour tomorrow, and all of them will go out on loan somewhere in there.
Matt Clark's gone as well. 2.25 to Middlesbrough, was it? So we talked, that's 20 already, isn't it? I think, was it 20 we had up? I've probably missed one or two other loanees have probably gone out since as well. Feel free to chip in if you remember any, Peter. But in the meantime, in the meantime, as you said, three or four others may go out on loan. Van Hecker, we're still not sure what's happening with him. I would keep him.
It sounds like they're going to keep Van Hecker.
I think we should, given the circumstances. This close to the window,
a heck of a risk.
It would be Van Hecker of a risk, yeah.
Given the situation, given how, if you've got only four other than a half, so we pay three at the back most of the time.
Exactly.
And Cole will know she is one of our left-back covers as well. And Veltman's one of our right-back covers.
Yeah, indeed. So, I think we've got all of the business done that we needed to do, loaning people out to the right clubs. On paper,
one or two youngsters might be, so one or two like Turns and Spong, who played against Forest Green maybe or something like that, might conceivably go out on loan. I don't know.
Furlong, maybe.
Yeah. The National League is still open, so the younger ones might even go there still. I noticed the National League is still always open. I saw a few Wrexham fans they've apparently been given dispensation because last year apparently they were stopped from trialing anyone after the deadline day because they're in Wales.
Oh, really?
Everyone else was given the right to do it because there was a lower level in England. So they, which is why Wrexham then dropped off a bit at a certain station because they didn't have the players because of injuries.
Yeah.
So they've been given dispensation now because they're in that league where everyone else is allowed to do it.
Hmm. Okay, fair enough.
So there is still an option of the National League if you're a younger player or something like that.
Do you think we should consider any loans in, if necessary? Including a striker.
I mean, it depends who they are, I suppose, doesn't it? I mean, if there's a player that would be right and would be a good loan that could get us through for a while and kind of could be an option to alternative to Welbeck, I wouldn't be against it. It needs to be even more of the right player than a signing to us, because you only obviously have a year of them rather than you buy someone and then you maybe think, well, maybe in a year's time they'll be better. You know, I wouldn't want Billy Gilmore on loan, for example. I know we couldn't get him on loan anyway.
Yeah.
But even if we could, I wouldn't want him on loan because I don't want to be developing Chelsea's players, and personally, or like as a club either. I don't want him loan to me either, personally, but you know.
Well, so you could just do some patchwork or something.
I mean, that'd be quite good actually for a year. Actually, that'd be quite good. You could do the hoovering and stuff like that, and
make some tea.
He could look after Duke. You know, it'd be quite good actually. That could actually work. I mean, if he could go out, that'd be quite fun.
Duke's the dog, by the way, for anyone that doesn't know, who might be turning up here tonight. I suppose we can use it if it works for us, but I can't.
I mean, that's it. Maybe
works.
I should put an offer in Billy Gilmore tomorrow.
You could loan him to the club.
I could loan him, and then the club could borrow him at weekends for games.
Paying a loan fee, obviously. Yeah, you've got to fund your beer, haven't you, Peter?
Something's got to, because you know.
I don't know if there's anybody I want to loan in. I don't see that there's any benefit to that in most scenarios. As you said, there might be a way of it. It could be a means to an end, a loan to buy scenario. Are there any more gems out there in terms of established players coming later into their careers that could fill a void just in the short term? You know, the Danny Welbecks, the Alan Lallanas, that kind of role.
Well, the one they talked about, I saw about, was Juan Mata, which obviously is like, I saw a bit of talk about on in North
Juan Mata. People have asked about Ross Barkley, because of course he's been released from his contract, but
I think he wants rather more wages than we're willing to give him. Yeah. I think probably
someone said he's on 200k a week, and then somebody very stupidly pointed out he's on nothing per week at the moment. But nonetheless, he's obviously going to be looking
one for of it. The many players over the 20 years since Abramovich took over that Chelsea have ruined in a way, affecting English players.
Yeah, there's been a few actually. Chelsea have guilty.
Wright Phillips, Parker.
Well, I'm thinking also Josh McEachran seemed like such a prospect. Tammy Abrahams has done well, but no thanks to Chelsea, only by going out on loan. We were in for him at one point, weren't we?
Tomori.
And the interesting thing, Tomori as well, very good player, and he's gone on, Abraham have gone on to make their mark in Italy and get into the England squad.
Gallagher looks like he's going to be another one who's going to probably have to move on.
As long as he doesn't go to Paris.
Well, he will go to Paris probably. It's
bloody
like,
better not.
And Ben Broer as well is like another one who's running after. I mean, he's one I really I really like actually.
He's kind of Welbeckian a bit, isn't he? isn't he a bit though? He does. He's roving.
I just love the kind of
the word. Less muscle power, but yeah, it's all about.
He's one who looked really good last year at Southampton for a while, and then obviously lost his way a little bit towards the end of the season. But unsurprisingly, given his first season at 19 or 20 or he was. But he's one I'd really be interested in.
Yeah. What about Tammy Abraham? Could be going back from Roma. Probably not now.
No.
Champions League and all that.
It's complicated.
He's complicated, yeah. He was another one. We actually tried to sign him on loan. And it was back in the days when loan fees or any kind of funding involved beyond just the general agreement was frowned upon. Apparently his agent asked for £1 million. After the deal had been agreed, Tony Bloom.
That's not a loan fee, even though. That's just a payment.
It's like a sweetener.
Yeah.
And Tony Bloom, in classic style, said, pardon the French, fuck off. I think, I don't know if he literally said that, but. I'd love to think he did as well. But he wasn't having it, which is fair enough, and I'd be the same. However, it's frustrating, because that was a good move there. He went to Swansea at the time.
Yeah,
was it?
But we still beat them 4-1.
Yeah, we did. Good, I'm glad you mentioned it. Was it 4-1 or 5-1?
4-1.
4-1, yeah. But those kind of players, there might be... Broglie's a good shout, actually.
I don't think Chelsea will release him yet, because they haven't actually got a striker.
Well, that doesn't normally stop them, they've never got a striker.
So it brings a little bit, because we're not really... obviously, we hope for good stuff. Who do you reckon's done best out of this transfer window, and who do you reckon's done worse?
Well, that's a great question. Let's get on to that. So, Chelsea have spent more than double, I think, anyone else. They've spent something like a third of a billion this transfer window. 63 mil, well, in terms of commitment at least, to Cucurella, 75 mil to Fofana, but they've signed a number of other players. They still don't have a striker, which is quite amusing when they've spent that much money.
They have one, but he's on loan into Milan.
Oh yes, there's that. Have they done well? They've probably signed good players. I think they've brought in the right kind of players, but they haven't completed their squad as far as I'm concerned. The amount they've spent, can't really say.
Even they lost Rudiger on a free as well, which is a massive
yeah,
loss.
Yeah, exactly. Which, of course, their hands were tied because of the embargo, didn't they, at the time.
But I'm not convinced he'd have stayed anyway. I think he was after big move. But yeah, I mean, I think they've not spent that well.
The biggest gainers in terms of numbers are Nottingham Forest. I think they're up to 20. Yeah. 20.
But that wasn't the question.
New signings. That's not the question, but I just wanted to throw that in. I had to get a dig in. 20.
A lot of new signings.
How the fuck? How's that going to work? It actually just might, because a lot of those signings
are
good.
They're set to sign like Aurier and Willy Bolly as well, apparently, now.
So that'll be 22 new players. Yeah.
I think of which two
that
have got on loan. I think two
squad,
have got on loan.
It?
I think.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But it is literally a new squad, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I can only imagine. I didn't keep track enough of last season to know who was in that squad, but there can't be anyone left.
Well, they've got about five or six first teamers and a few who dropped out completely.
Got Brendan Johnson's obviously.
Yeah,
there.
Johnson, Worrell,
and the goalie left.
They had about five loanees in the team
from Forest point of view.
Yeah, the goalie left, which is why they brought Henderson in. They lost Zinchenko, the Watford player.
They had five loanees.
Yeah, Zinchenko. I think they went up a lot quicker than they thought they would. Keenan Davis, the Villa player, who was really, really key part of their team. And yeah, two or three other loanees. Mm. And lost a few others, like Graben, obviously, was regular last season and went and said he wanted to go.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to be like reserve. Fair enough. Obviously, Lewis Graben, a former Albion target a long time ago as well, like a decade ago or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
When he's at Bournemouth. But yeah, I mean, I think they've gone well past the we've replaced the players and also improved the bench. It's just literally a whole new, as you say, a whole new squad. And
they have strengthened.
There are some genuine gems in there. I think Henderson, the one they signed is Renan Lodi, who they signed this week, sounds like an absolute bargain at the moment. Mm. He was like, played for Atletico in like Champions League knockouts and that sort of thing.
The striker could be handy as well.
Lingard, Ayomwe, Lingard on paper.
Yeah.
If they can get him firing and get him the service.
It's a short-term deal, so it works.
Get him the service. The Huddersfield guy, O'Brien, seems like really good signing from what I've read. The guy from...
Did they sign as well?
They signed O'Brien and they signed Toffolo from Huddersfield.
Oh, Toffolo, that was it, yeah.
And the other one that sounds really good, although he's injured most, Niakate, who's a centre-half from Mainz, who was like their captain, I think, at Mainz in the Bundesliga. So they've got some really good players, but also, inevitably, with 20 players, you're going to have some absolute dross in there, aren't you?
They've gone full-on gamble here, haven't they? They've signed like you would not believe, like no one else has ever done before. Yet they've got some good quality in there, so they've got the chance for that to work.
It's how that works, and then
yeah, it's so much of a risk, though. However, maybe it's long-term planning. Maybe there's something to do with if they went back down and came back up or whatever. I don't know. When all said and done, I really rate Steve Cooper. I think if anyone could do it, he can, in terms of getting those players
and
married together.
And it is literally a job that no one's ever done before.
Yeah, it's a hell of a gap. It's fascinating. I'm kind of interested to see how that goes.
Yeah.
I don't mind if it works, in a way. I don't normally approve of that level.
Not at our expense.
Not at our expense, obviously, yeah. I don't normally approve of that level of change, because I don't think it's great, healthy.
It's a good payout for it.
Yeah, I'm going to go to that one, mate.
Yeah.
Up for that?
I'm not sure when it is, but yeah, I'm definitely
The old trip to Jerusalem, as they say.
Yeah, I'm no issue with Forest, and I think they will. It's genuinely the absolute question mark. You know, the kind of like random team in the Premier League. You know, they could come 12th or 10th or like that on the back of like a lot of these players doing well, or they could be like bottom by a mile because they all fail miserably.
And it's largely
genuinely like the most intriguing thing about Premier League.
The number of loanees that were involved there has made this fascinating, and it's like Aston Villa a couple of years ago with extra Anthony's, isn't it? It's just on a different level
and
to
It could, yeah.
And they just got away with it.
They could
Villa,
go anywhere from thanks to a goal that wasn't.
Yeah, the Sheffield United game. Yeah,
but it could be anywhere from 20th with a record low points, maybe 20 points like that, to mid table and pretty comfortable and doing really well. So
as a fresh face in the modern era, at least I don't mind Forrest staying up. I do like Steve Cooper. I'd take it or leave it with their fans, but you know, some of them are nice.
It'll be genuinely interesting to see what happens, and I think they are the probably most interesting question mark in the Premier League this year.
So, them and Fulham, we've been talking about Fulham.
Yeah.
Who finishes higher? I'm going Fulham.
It's a tough one, isn't it? I think probably Fulham because they're more settled.
Mm.
And they were a lot better last season as well, to be fair,
both
generally.
Both might survive, though.
Yeah, I think Bournemouth are gone. Whoever they appoint really is going to find it very hard to stay out with that team.
Well, they're definitely keeping the lowest budget. If you finish below Bournemouth, the fact that they were questioning that.
Yeah.
They said, well, it's up or down, we're on the low budget, that's that.
You finish below Bournemouth, I think you'll go down.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think Bournemouth are down. I think Everton and Leicester and Wolves are in deep shit here.
Wolves have spent a lot of money this summer, though. They've spent, on...
I'm not convinced with them.
Go back to
were so poor against us at the end of last season.
But
I know there's some changes there. But
they bought Kalasic today, which is an interesting signing.
Raul Jimenez is totally out. He's lost his... They relied on him, Jimenez, for a lot of what they did well to keep them up in the table.
But Kalasic could be the one who offers the alternative.
Possibly. In which case, someone else is in trouble. Who? Southampton.
Yeah, again, they had a good result last night.
Some good signings. They won 2-1 at Chelsea, coming from behind to do so, I hasten to add. They've done something we've not done in the Premier League era, beating Chelsea. So, you know, fair enough. It's a difficult one, isn't it? But I do think anyone finishes below Bournemouth are down, definitely. Bournemouth are down.
Wolves, before I go off to Wolves, I've looked up their signings. They've bought some big money players as well. They've spent big on two or three players.
Are they all Portuguese?
Nunes, who's the Matias Nunes, who's a supporting number one, cost £42 million.
Yeah.
And then Gonçalo Guedes from Valencia, and they've now got Kalasic, who's not. And then Collins from Burt. So they've spent close to £100 million this summer.
Yeah. That's a lot. That puts them almost.
They also got
that.
A lot of money from Forest for Morgan Gibbs-White, obviously, which.
Oh, they did very well there, didn't they?
£30 million or whatever. It says 42.5 though, and that's the absolute maximum they can be. I think it's 25 to 30 with a lot of add-ons.
I think they've got good value there, to be honest, don't you?
For a player they've not really regarded as being first choice ever.
Yeah.
I mean, to get that sort of money.
Mm. Speaking about the Albion, just swing it about that way, we've talked about who's gone.
Forest, of course, the other one we didn't discuss is Emmanuel Dennis, who started off so well for Watford last year. And then didn't really carry on. But then Watford also didn't carry on, so.
Yeah. I was going to say, swinging back to the Albion, the figures year on year in the Premier League in terms of transfers are insane, and they become more and more insane year after year, transfer window after transfer window. We put it in 6 monthly terms. The Albion, this is unprecedented. The money that we brought in, £63 million eventual figure for Cucurella. We've got £15 million, I think rises to £16 million for Morpay, which is money back on that, which is great. We've sold Basuma for £25 million, rising to £35 million. So we're talking over about £115 million just with three players in one window. This is immensely different to what we're used to as Albion fans. Say from just a few years back and beyond. Incredible, isn't it, to think how much money is swelling around, coming and going. We're well in profit. Whether Tony wants to liquidise some of that earnings, I don't know. If he wants to invest it in infrastructure more, I don't know. If he wants to sign that elusive striker, the so-called fated 20-goal-a-season striker that Graham Potter quite rightly has laughed off as being a fantasy because they don't exist outside of world-class exclusives. But
Holland got 20 at the World Cup before now,
Should
have signed him.
Yeah. All in all, though, the figures swelling around the Premier League in general and around the Albion in particular, given, what we've been used to as fans, it's truly astonishing, isn't it? It takes a moment to take a step back and think, this is nuts.
If you look at the levels, we sat quite high up on those net transfer figures in the first year, couple of years.
Mm.
We were £60-70 million we spent and we didn't really get anything in.
Yeah.
And now we're way, way bottom. I mean, it's we've got £70 million profit, I think, this summer.
Yeah. success breeds success.
Yeah.
We made £48 million on Cucurella, well, we stand to do so anyway, in over a 1 year period of having it on our books. We could have dreamed of that in the past, obviously. Yeah. Success breeds success. When you're in League One and you're trying to pass your way out of the division for the first time with Gus or whoever, you know, that's a different league to what we're dealing with now. Obviously, you can't have a £48 million profit in a year in League One, whoever it is. But the beauty of the Premier League is if you run things correctly, you get the right players in, they happen to do amazingly well, the levels of increased success off the scale.
My worry is how long we can continue doing what we're effectively doing. I mean, we've not really invested at all this summer.
Yeah. We've talked about Southampton as potential relegation candidates. And they were doing what we were doing a few years ago and they ran out of steam.
To me, you've got to keep investing in players and we're not doing that. That's the worry. We've brought in four players this summer, one of whom is on loan.
Yeah.
And one of whom's on loan to USG.
Adingra, yeah.
And the other two are Nkiso, who is a gamble at even the best levels, and obviously Asuprinon, who is...
We did sign Baker Boati, didn't we, another one for the future. Yeah. And there's one or two others I think we've signed, haven't we? Who's the other guy we signed?
We've not really signed players for 2023.
That's another guy for the 18s, I think. Oh, I can't remember his
name. Oh, the guy from Man City, yeah.
Yeah,
I can't remember his name now. So but in a sense...
long-term future. Yeah.
But you can't keep doing that. We can't keep basically letting two of our best players, and the player who, for all the comments, was our top scorer last year, go and bring in one first team player in effectively, because Nkiesa's not got near. He was on the bench last night, the first time he's been on the bench at all.
Yeah.
We can't keep doing that.
That's true.
We can't keep doing that every summer.
That's true, yeah. And
we haven't even brought any sort of prospects in, European prospects in, you know, that sort of thing this summer.
No, are we slacking off, or is it just the case of those opportunities are not
at
the moment?
It's just, it hasn't worked out for whatever reason, but we've not done that. And I think we'll be fine this year, even if we don't sign a striker tomorrow, and I really hope we don't take that view, but we probably will be fine because we're already halfway to January target. We've got, you know, we get another 10 points.
Yeah.
You know, kind of.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'm relatively happy with our status at the moment, but I do agree with you. Obviously, in terms of the first team, there's one or two players we need to sign. We've already said that. But in terms of the overall big picture, this planning for the future stuff, yeah, there's a bit of a shortfall. I would like us to get the right players in numbers of maybe two or three more. But it's getting the right fit, isn't it?
And absolutely, but we've had all summer to look at the right fit to striker. Mm. We apparently have these shortlists of players, you know. We're not doing it just from mid-order.
I honestly think if you've got your 10 priority players, you could very genuinely, through no fault of your own, miss out on all 10.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
some are not available, some have gone somewhere else, some are refusing to go, some have clubs who dick you around about the prices, like South American clubs seem to do a little bit. We're hearing that might be the case with Buonanotte, is it?
I have no idea. I'm very glad I didn't know how to pronounce his name because I didn't bother now.
Yeah, there's a number of different component parts that might cause us to not be able to get the signings that we fully intend to get. Not for the want of trying, not for the want of being well organised. We could just miss out because we miss out. It can happen.
Yeah, but back to the Premier League generally.
Yeah,
big winners, Arsenal.
Oh yeah,
Arsenal. Ignoring how they start, though, Jesus and Zinchenko are huge signings for them.
Well, they're part of the reason they've started so well. I think they're both phenomenally good signings.
Fabio Vieira, they seem to be quite good from the sound of it as well. So they've got, good signings.
Yeah.
Brentford for me are a big winner. I know they lost Eriksen, yeah. but
they were always going to, weren't
yeah.
they? Yeah.
But they, or if they did, they would only be a temporary thing.
Dan Scott, is it?
Yeah.
Good signing. Nothing yet, but he's a good signing.
I think he's a very good signing.
Yeah.
Hickey, that's got a really good reputation from Italy.
Aaron Hickey.
And similar teams, trajectory to Tierney, obviously did really well at Arsenal when fit.
Yeah.
You know, Lewis Potter, obviously one that you've mentioned a few times.
And what price did he go for?
Yeah, £2.15, £20 million, according to Sky. But
well, that's what I was telling you he should go for. Just saying. anyway,
Palace, I think, have done okay. Decore, although they lost Gallagher, I think Decore is a good signing.
Yeah.
Richards, you know, Johnson's a good backup keeper.
Yeah, that was a good signing, Sam Johnson.
Yeah.
Johnston.
Yeah. Fulham, I think, have done really well. I'm just looking through kind of Sky.
And they're not finished at the moment. Yet,
no, they've got two or three more. They lost out on Justin Kluivert today to work permit issues, didn't they? But,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that a relative of Patrick Kluivert?
Yeah, son's son, I think, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Leeds, I think, have done okay, although they didn't play very well at the weekend.
Well, they've signed players, two or three of them are American, other people you don't really know, and I wonder how they're going to do.
I think overall they'll be better than last season, because they obviously didn't have Phillips at all half of last season anyway.
Yeah.
It's Rafinha that's their big loss.
Yeah.
But Aaronson seems to be quite a decent replacement for him.
Maybe quite a rounded setup, maybe.
City, I think, are big winners because they got Haaland. I mean.
Well, he's not too bad, is he?
He's single handedly.
Scored a hat-trick tonight, is it?
Yeah.
Again? Yeah, he's going to break all the records, isn't he, if he stays in the Premier League.
He's going to be ridiculously good. He's going to be. Yeah. when he gets two or three years older, you know.
Yeah. Once he matures, yeah.
And Spurs, I think, have done pretty well.
Spurs have really strengthened their attacking line, haven't they?
And also, Bissouma, I think, when he settles in, will help their midfield a lot.
Yeah.
When he becomes a regular starter. Perisic is a really underrated signing. Spence actually has a real prospect. They've got Romero permanently now. So, you know, I think they'll do it. They've done pretty well. Weakness, teams who've struggled, I think United have not done as well as you people think. It'll be interesting what Casemiro does and how he does. But
it's
not
through the nose, obvious signing type, isn't it? It could be fine, but.
Obvious one who's lost, Leicester.
Leicester.
They've signed one reserve, Smithies as reserve goalkeeper.
And he's not that great, is he? He's not bad. But it shows you the fragility of the clubs in our sphere. The Southamptons, the Leicesters, you could say the Aston Villas and the Evertons as well, and the Brightons, and the all those teams. It only takes a few of the component parts to go wrong, not necessarily through any fault of anyone, just through circumstance. Yeah. So Leicester, for example, I think they were running the club well, but a few bits have gone wrong. Vardy's getting a bit older, a couple of people got injured, somebody wanted to go and they got sold. Fofana then goes...
They've got a few out of contract in the summer as well, next summer.
And suddenly you've got, not a crisis, but you've got a bit of an issue. And actually, because they've started so badly, it is a bit of a crisis actually at Leicester. They genuinely could go down, it can spiral downwards.
Villa is another one I don't think have done that well. They signed Diego Carlos on paper as a very good signing, but obviously got injured quite badly, quite quickly.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's unlucky.
But then Coutinho, does a team of Villa's level really need a player of Coutinho's ability? Is he going to help them? Is he going to work that hard for them?
It's one of those signings that sounds like
it's a luxury signing. And when you've got Buendia already, do you really need... Obviously, Coutinho's a lot better than Buendia, but
again,
you can't play them both together.
If he gets injured, that's a lot of wages.
Kamara, again, on paper, was a really good signing, but hasn't really settled yet. You know, they've not really...
Well, I mean, their match day income, is that much more than Brighton's? They get what, several thousand more?
They probably get more capacity, but they do they get more corporate?
Cause
I don't think it's as nice, probably, corporate-wise as ours. But yeah, so they're another one, I think. Obviously, Bournemouth are the big losers because I don't think they've got anywhere near the players they want to. They needed.
It's brutal but true, yeah.
I think. I think on purely on transfer window, we're one of the big losers.
Yeah.
Whether that then we've obviously got the players, hopefully, that we think can replace that internally, but in terms of just the transfer window, we've replaced Cucurella with Ascupion, and we've not replaced Bissouma or Mopay, so in effect we are a big loser from transfer window. Now hopefully they believe that, you know, Undav can replace Mopay, well, you know, delay because they don't seem to yesterday, and you know, Casado obviously came in for Bissouma, but Casado was there with Bissouma last season, so you know, on paper we have I think Chelsea have had a bad transfer window. Considering how much money they spent, they've not strengthened that much. Sterling's a great signing. Cucurella was significantly overpriced for what he was. Koulibaly doesn't address the lack of pace that their defence has.
Fofana
will do well. And will be a good signing, but he's not worth £75 million.
No, not quite. No, not exactly.
So it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Everton, I think, also have lost out because they basically replaced Richarlison with Mopay. So,
yeah,
that's really not a good,
Everton are a team, I think. Well, you talk about the transfer window and about prospects for relegation. I think they've got some serious problems there. I think Lampard, they'll persist with for a certain period. I think they'll do badly during that period. And then they'll look to change. And I'm not sure if they're going to get in. Because if they're then that far down, with not a very good transfer window, not very good squad, they go into a spiral there.
And at what point do you start looking at...
Are they better than Forest?
At what point do you start looking at the club... And rather than the player, rather than the manager as well. Yeah. At what point do you say we've been through so many managers?
The name's just a name, isn't it?
I'm not a big fan of Lampard. I'm not particularly advocating him. But at what point do you look at it and say, something's wrong with this club? It's not about the manager?
And that is the problem. Same with Man United. They've brought in a very good manager, a very good coach. He'll do well. You'd rather bring him in after you've got all your ducks in order behind the scenes, and that's the problem. I don't think those clubs are well run. I think Brentford are well run. I think Rotherham are well run. Peterborough, Brighton, Fulham probably are. Liverpool are. Arsenal are probably getting that way. There's a number of clubs up and down the country who are well run. Forest is a bit of a head case. You can't really tell because there's so much going on there.
Well, they wanted their chairman out a year or two ago, didn't they? So
yeah,
but I don't think they are that well run.
If you look at the clubs who are not well run, the first names you think of are Everton and Man United, for me.
Yeah.
Immediately, I think those two clubs, Chelsea to a degree, maybe, but not that's more to do with
my I think in fairness, the guys just come in at Chelsea.
Just come in, yeah.
So what do you reckon about Anthony, Man U?
Well, again, they're paying right through the nose for a top-quality ready-made player. The risk premium thing we talked about before, fine, that's fine. They are the big six club, do that. But is there a cohesive policy here?
Also, there is
Will
a risk.
Will he fit in with who else they've got?
There is a risk as well.
Well,
he's only in Holland, where we know that players doing very well in Holland. Alireza Jahanbakhsh, for example. I'm not comparing the two.
Well,
I'm not even sure he did that well in Holland, did he? I mean,
I don't think
he was that. But yeah, Jahanbakhsh was top scorer in Eredivisie.
Yeah.
And we got him for 17 million and it was nowhere near good value. They're spending £80 million on him,
I think. It's a lot of money. It's a big outlay. It's a big risk. Is he really worth that? I mean, we talk about Darwin Nunes was £85 million. Is he a better player than Anthony? Yes, he is, I think.
But again, he's only in Portuguese league. I mean,
that's true. But we've seen what he can do in the Champions League to a greater degree than Anthony with his Dutch team. But you can see the quality there. You can see he's a good player. Admittedly, the middling clubs, the sort of players we've signed, there is an element of worry because you can only see them up to a certain proportion, but certain players stand out a million miles away, and Darwin Nunes is that. Anthony, I don't know, I haven't seen enough of him to know, but...
You know, Darwin Nunes has done really well, so I think it's like, you know, it's open to survival of the fittest, and...
You had to do it, didn't you? You couldn't resist.
And he got through that, so, you know.
I thought we'd evolve from this, Peter. But clearly not. Are you Peter Beagle? Just got to throw that in as well. Peter Beagle, he was an ex-Prime player, wasn't he?
I think he played for Northern Club, didn't he?
I don't know, I'm not sure. Anyway, there we go, digression time. So, any further words on the transfer market? Any other interesting signings further down as well? There's been some, I really like Oscar Espedian at Hull. Look out for him.
I think the best one, if they get through tomorrow, would be Watford keeping Sarr and Yao Pedro.
Yeah.
If they keep those two,
they've been heavily linked.
Yeah.
Linked.
But they've not signed anyone yet, so if they can keep those two... Mm.
Burnley have started signing players of ethnic origin, haven't they? They've got some black players in their team as well, dare I say.
They've signed 14 players, crazy like that. It's like, they've got some interesting names there. Some, obviously, like the few players from City on loan / permanently who's to play for City, and one or two Anderlecht linked were all previous Anderlecht players. And Company has got, he's got an interesting team. And they won 5-1 at Wigan at the weekend, so it could be an interesting...
I had an interview with the, his name's Richard Hughes, I think he's the sporting director at Forest Green Rovers, an interview on Not the Top 20 podcast, and that was interesting too, because he was talking about losing his best three players, you could say, a bit like Brighton, speculated on. It pretty much happened. Mm. He was saying, well, those three players, two of them were released from clubs in non-league, and one of them was released from a club above them, I think Bolton or somewhere, and they became the best three players of Forest Green Rovers, but only by joining them and being developed by them. So you could look at how well clubs have run. I think Forest Green Rovers are very well run. They're doing what Brighton are doing, trying to develop players.
This is what I've said for a while. It's like people, we talk about, like, and I don't necessarily agree with the not necessarily bringing in. We should have brought two or three more in this summer. And if we don't, in the end, I'll be disappointed.
Yeah.
But the only way teams like Brighton attract players like Cucurella is by selling players like Cucurella.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other way. If we keep hold of everyone until their contract runs out or whatever,
don't get pissed off.
Then exactly, then other players won't come. Yeah. So it's the only way that people, teams like Brighton, again, can sign players like Cucurella is to bring these players in. Where I don't agree is that we've not strengthened as a result. We've taken on 70 million. At the moment, we're sat on it, and we've not spent it. You know, we spent 50 million on a stupid one, but other than that, we've not increased 50 million on the first team. And Keita doesn't seem anywhere near the first team at the moment in his position, considering he's on a bench, but that's because Sarmiento's out. And Tiso.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, I don't think he... I don't regard him as a first team addition this summer.
I would vet him. I think he impressed me at Forest Green Rovers. Yes, it's Forest Green Rovers, but
he looks
hungry, he looks right up for it. He's linking up play, he's full of energy, he's pacey, he's got a supple touch to him as well. He can really turn it on, and I think he's, give him a free rein in certain games. Yeah, bring him on as a sub 20 minutes from the end of the game on Sunday, for example. Bring him on in the League Cup at Arsenal. Bring him on in the FA Cup third round, whoever that is. Keep him in the squad through the season.
I'm saying we can't, you know, we've lost two and a half really key first team players, and we replaced them with probably one. And
maybe he could be the answer this season.
All right,
we don't know yet.
He isn't the answer at the moment, as far as Potter's concerned, clearly.
Yeah.
Potter's seen him in Cleveland in pre-season, and I fully advocate the policy of selling players. I don't even mind selling more than one player in the summer. My issue is that we don't then go and spend some of that money, and we haven't really spent it. We spent about 30 million this summer and got about 100 million in.
As long as we buy someone that's worth it,
I'm not saying for the sake of it. Before anyone kind of comments on that, I'm not saying a 20 goal striker, but I do think we need to invest more in the first team as we go forward. If we're going to, we can't just take. And I also don't think, and it frustrates me, we're down to deadline day again and we need two players. It's so frustrating.
I love the notion that year on year,
every bloody year,
with 15 days to go and it's all done.
Yeah, but
and
it never happens.
Back smoking cigars.
And we've had it, they're a great start to the season. I've taken 10 points in those five games. I wouldn't expect it to be the 10 points the way it was.
Should be 12.
Yeah.
Newcastle. Should have been 12.
Could have been 13 as well. I think we could have got a draw last night. Really,
all right, 13 out of 15.
But it's just, we haven't done, I would have expected us, if we got that much money in, to have done more business by before deadline day, and it's frustrating not to have done it. And if we just sign Gilmore tomorrow, I'll have the same view, because he isn't going to improve our first team this minute.
It's not going to address the issues, immediate issues. Yeah. Happy to have him.
Unless he suddenly becomes a new Danny Welbeck.
Yeah.
Well, so I think he's a plan for Tarsino going in a year.
Anyway.
And he'll get in and he'll do okay. If we have a few injuries, he'll do fine.
Do that independently of anything else. But do the other stuff we need to do.
We need a striker. We arguably need more defence. But I've given up on that now. And we are going to put a second goalkeeper as well.
Peter, we're going to reconvene for a brief follow-up.
It might be very brief, judging that.
To see how we've done between now and...
Well, maybe it'll be like 10 o'clock, there'll be a kind of, don't go to bed yet, and they'll be like, well, we re-signed Dean Hammond at, like, 11 o'clock or something.
As long as we haven't re-signed Kevin Augustine, we're right with it,
He probably won't be any less mobile than he was when he played for us, to be fair.
Yeah, it's like Glenn Murray. Signed Glenn Murray, he hasn't lost none of his pace.
At this stage, I'd probably take selling Glenn Murray, to be honest. Yeah. He probably still knows where the goal is.
Exactly, just... plonk him up there.
Yeah.
You know, when they've got a low block and they're just filing back, plonk him in the box.
Yeah.
Three or four players around him, he could still
score. He still do a good job, I reckon.
Yeah. And I love the way he says we a lot during the punditry stuff. Have you noticed that? I like that. Anyway, Peter, that's it for now. We'll reconvene after the deadline.
With all our signings.
With all our signings. It might take quite a long time to list them all, I'm sure.
And which clubs they got on loan to.
We'll also do our little preview of the Leicester game from Sunday, which is now on TV at 2 o'clock, on Sky, I think it is. I'm also hoping that we'll be having a chat with our Leicester mates from Leicester Till I Die, who will give us, I'm sure, his views on Leicester and their stunning start to the season. I'm sure they're very impressed.
I wouldn't mock their start to the season quite yet.
No, not yet. No. If they beat us, and yes, it'll all go wrong from there. But for now,
they're always really good against teams they haven't won yet.
From now, from the Gladstone, because we've got far more drinks to consume, haven't we? And we need to crack on. We've been going very slowly today, by the way. We're going to sign out for now. So, Peter.
Stand or fall.
Up the Albion. And so to part two of this delicious podcast that is a transfer special and a Leicester preview podcast. We could almost argue it's a bit of a match day special because we're going to the Worthing game away at St Albans today. It's Saturday afternoon. Welcome to the Farmers Boy Pub.
Yeah, we've literally moved pubs.
We've moved pubs since the last bit. Who knew? Well, I don't think we'd be able to stand
up. We just started
off
walking off Wednesday night, whatever, and then we're here now, finally.
Yep, yeah, I'm having a nice bit of what's it called? Interior motion or something.
Something like that.
Internal
motion. Interior design.
And what are you on, Peter?
I'm on a cask beer, which I can't remember the name of, because even I just put it on Untappd. But hoping for another good day out, non-league day out.
That's fine.
I'm drinking Heart Drones by the Pentridge Brewing Company.
Nice. Any good?
It's nice, yeah, very nice. Gave it a solid 4 on Untappd.
Solid 4?
Yeah. Beer number 1,237.
On Untappd, lovely. Yeah, you don't drink much, do you, Peter?
No, that's just from yesterday as well.
Well, to be fair, that is a glowing recommendation, 4.0.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, it's very nice.
Is it a 4.0 percentage as well?
It's pretty much, yeah, which is...
Well, this is a pleasant bar. We're at a pub, I should say, a traditional pub. We're in the beer garden. It's the Farmer's Boy, St Albans. Quite
been ignored by a cat.
Been ignored by a cat. Apart from that, we're the only people here, so we can freely be abusive if we wanted to, but we won't do that.
Screw you.
What we're here to discuss in this part, before we go on to our Leicester preview in part three, which I recorded yesterday, confusingly, with Chris, the Leicester Till I Die podcaster, is the transfer window. So we were on the run up to the final hours of it when we last spoke. It has now closed. We have made a signing, one that we were rumoured to be in for, but we didn't make any striker or defensive signings, which a lot of people are unhappy about. That signing that did happen, of course, we all now know, is Billy Gilmore, who I think is a really good fit for the Albion. It's a good fit for what Graham's probably trying to do this season as well, because I think from his interview in the Athletic with Andy Naylor, it seems that he's looking to utilise and make more flexible the midfielders we've got. So have McAllister and
Casado.
And Casado is a double pivot, as they said in the article. Or alternatively, you could put Billy Gilmore in. You can play McAllister further forward.
I think the thing that Tinnick in me also thinks probably it's a look ahead. We've got him and Kozlowski lined up for when, at some point, probably next summer, Casado goes as well.
Yeah, I do think that Gilmore will feature
He will feature this year, especially if people are saying after the World Cup, maybe when if some teams have gone deep, McAllister's been with Argentina deep, you know, for a while, maybe he'll get the Christmas games more, and I think he'll get plenty of game time. It's more that, I think he's also, and he obviously had a bit of we've got him partly because Tuchel doesn't really rate him. Clearly, and he doesn't really rate any of their young players much, except for the obvious ones like James and Mount, who are far too good to be ignored. And also because he had a bit of a poor spell at Norwich, and there were loads of Norwich fans abusing him online, saying good luck, Brighton, he's terrible. But actually, I think the difference is that we have a very good team around him, whereas Norwich were useless last year.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's not to be disrespectful to them too much, but they were terrible.
I mean, it's not disrespectful, it's accurate. No. They were terrible. Yeah. And he was used to playing around Chelsea's players. Yeah. And obviously, we haven't got Chelsea's players, but we've got a lot nearer Chelsea's players and a lot nearer Norwich, playing style than Norwich had.
And he's going to get...
especially once Smith came in and played a bit more direct as well. I don't think he played quite the same passing game as Parker.
I don't know, he'll play as many games as he did for Norwich. He played 24 games last season. I'm sure he'll get that much if you include sub appearances. Yeah. The deal, according to Andy Naylor, the deal is 7.5 million up front. There are 2.5 million in add-ons potentially, so it's a deal that could go up to 10 million, but apparently 1.5 million of those 2.5 million are much more achievable, whatever that means. So it's likely to be a definite 9.
And a million if you go to the moon.
If you go to the moon, or the Champions League, you know, that position we're in at the moment in the table, then maybe it's on that basis, or qualifying for Europe or something, I don't know. But let's say 9, maybe 10. So
either way, so even if it's 10, well, if it's 10, we'll have probably done something ridiculous that was...
Given his age, early 20s,
it's a no-brainer.
Lots of talent. Yeah, it's a great signing.
He's got the experience of the Premier League as well. Yeah. He's played quite a few games in the league, which most of the players that you get for that sort of value are that sort of... I mean, I'm amazed, Chelsea, considering you know how much money we've made this summer in a lot of ways, because they gave us a lot of it. I'm stunned they've let him go that cheaply.
Yeah. I am.
It sounds like Gilmore basically refused to go out on loan again and insisted on a permanent deal. And I mean, I don't think there's many teams, if any, in the Premier League that will be a better fit from him in terms of getting games and having the right style and being a decent team and quality players around him.
Yeah.
I think probably he couldn't have chosen a better team to come to.
And it goes without saying, but just in case anyone doesn't know, Colwell's on loan from Chelsea, so we can't have another loan. So even if he wanted to pacify Chelsea by doing
that, he didn't want to anyway.
He didn't do that anyway.
He didn't want to.
Or even a loan to buy.
Because it's sounds like the board at Chelsea wanted to keep him and wanted to at least sort of have him around. But Tuchel's comments after Southampton were he had no other options when he was sitting on a bench. So, I mean, that surely kind of pretty much signed. I don't necessarily think Tuchel has much a long term future at Chelsea. They spent a lot of money and I don't think they spent it very well this summer. As we said, I think on the previous part of this pod, I don't think Chelsea has spent well. I don't think United has spent particularly well either.
Yeah.
They're just sort of it struck to me a strategy of like just throwing money at it rather than actually having. We're the exact opposite. We have a plan and very much.
Yeah.
I do still think we should have signed a striker, and I know there'll be people out there who say trust the club and do that sort of thing, but the club clearly wanted a striker.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, they didn't want one. They were looking for one.
So,
the deals are notoriously hard to get over the line for the right kind of striker at the right price.
As we speak, Neil Mopey signed Robertson in the North London derby, in the Merseyside derby.
So that was a quick move. Yeah.
Question mark: would he have helped us midweek? Given they don't seem to think Undav is ready for whatever reason, I think he probably would have done. He'd have been a better option up front. That false nine is not working. It worked once at Liverpool, and we seem to have stuck with it since, and it's never worked. It didn't work at Villa, didn't work home to Newcastle last year, didn't work at home to Leeds. I think it was home to Leeds that Mopey missed last year. Yeah. Didn't work. Home to Leeds, sorry. It didn't work midweek as well. And
is this Graham Potter's Achilles heel kind of persisting beyond the reasonable time with that, or is it a case of he knows there's something in there that can work and has
I think if it is going to work out, he needs to stick the pace up on the pitch. They need to have Lamptey and Mitoma. They basically need to have both of them on the pitch rather than bringing them on when we're all behind and the other team is sitting back.
Yeah.
That's the only way it can really work. Stick Mitoma up the pitch because he's our quickest player up front. Have Lamptey on the pitch at the start as well. That's how you need, without a physical presence up front, really, you need pace. And Trossard is a good player, but he's not that quick. He's very tricky and he beats players through trickery, but he's not going to get in around the back as regularly, I don't think, which is what you need as a false nine.
Yeah, I think so. I mean.
And Wepu's definitely not that fit. That quick.
The only thing I'm not sure about is to what degree it's true that he doesn't trust in that. It might be that he's quite notoriously slow in integrating players, isn't he, at first. He's happy to bring in whoever, including young players, but they don't come in very quickly to the squad. So I think it's more a case of their...
But either way, he's not happy to play him. He wasn't happy to start him in week.
Yeah, but he's mentioned the fact there's 13 games or whatever it is until the window reopens. And I think...
Except I'd argue there's 14 because... They definitely won't be able to sign someone and play them Everton away as well on 2nd of January.
And I don't know if that includes.
That's assuming we sign someone. We've had discussions on the WhatsApp group about this. How often do we sign someone in January and then bring them straight into the team?
Not often. There's been one or two, hasn't there?
people we signed in the past.
The references were going back to like Knockhart and Stevens, yeah. Obviously didn't, that sort of thing. But I mean, Lucardia didn't start off in the team initially. No. You heard him about injured. Lamptey didn't play until after the.
Did Morpay come in Jan as well?
No, he was a summer signing. Oh, yeah, just that summer.
Yeah.
There's very few signings we've made in January who've come straight into the team.
Yeah, but what my point was going to be is that I think he might not be confident with him for three or four games, or two or three games, and then he'll start to play him. On a quite regular basis, he plays all right. I know he's a different kind of striker.
He's a different
kind of
striker,
but we've got different strategies in games sometimes. So he might. It depends on what we set up.
The good news, assuming Welbeck stays fit, is there is only one midweek game between now and Christmas.
Yeah.
That's a positive, because obviously the problem seemed to be that Welbeck doesn't recover quite quickly enough.
The other thing for the midweek interview that Potter's done with the Athletic is quoting. He was saying. It's a good signing for us. It's going to be good for him as well, Billy Gilmore. Yeah. And he's going to get integrated, and he's going to learn more and more about us. We're going to learn more and more about him as it goes on, which is an obvious statement. But that seems to imply it's an integration process. Oh, yeah. So I think with Undav and with Ferguson in terms of the first team, and in terms of Mittema to a certain degree, and Colwill, and you know anyone else that comes into the equation, they're going to be integrated slowly. So I do think we probably will see Undav. With confidence,
have to now, won't we?
Yeah. Well, we have to, but I think that might have always been the plan, unless we got somebody that we really wanted, and we didn't get someone who we really wanted. Yeah. So I think he was happy to go. But what we've got
with Gilmore,
so I think he has got confidence.
Gilmore will be integrated because there's lots to cover there. There are options. Most people could come in that position. I think he'll be fine if he comes into a position that actually is supposed to be. Alzate's loan seems to be off, so he might be able to come in. Yeah. Whereas up front, we needed a striker on Tuesday. Yeah. And we didn't have one.
I agree with you. And the fact he didn't play him now has made people say, look, he doesn't trust him.
But also, Udam as well, and it's my thinking.
That's become a settled narrative to everyone, and it might be true, and it's an easy conclusion to jump to, and it might be deadly accurate. But I don't think we have necessarily known that's definitely the case. I think it's more a matter of he's got a 2 or 3 week bedding in process from this point that he's looking at, that Graham's looking at, to get him in. Mm. I'm not sure he doesn't trust him. I think that's becoming a bit too locked in as a narrative that isn't necessarily the case.
But maybe more that he isn't the type of striker you need in that position that Welbeck
does. No, that's the issue, isn't it? It's the battle of replacement.
Which we needed for Welbeck,
as and when needed, we have got other ways of playing, of course. We could play with someone like Trossard and have overlapping...
When we played with Trossard the other day, we became very one-dimensional again, and very kind of, we sat outside, and I got a comment from one of our listeners about the fact that I was saying about us, you say the formation changed. It wasn't the point about the formation. The point is about the way we play. Was we played very much in front of them when we did it. We didn't play the ball early to a figurehead. We didn't attack really with pace when we got the ball either. Yeah. We just did our old way of playing, which was very, very slow build up, very, very build up, and we didn't have the player in the box to then get the ball in.
We're not as good as when we're ponderous, and I'm not sure that was the game plan. I think it was just. So used to playing that.
But I think it's what happens maybe when we play that system. Yeah. I'm not saying it was their game plan, but we didn't have the option of going long to Welbeck.
Yeah, and it does restrict us, It's a conundrum, but I do think we'll largely get through, certainly till January, without too much fuss. Obviously, touch wood, there is a table
that we don't get a really key injury. Yeah.
Which, of course, we're talking about Welbeck here.
Well, we spoke the other day about two players, really, that we can't replace in that team very easily.
Yeah.
Sanchez and Welbeck are the two who would be a big drop if they got injured.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Obviously, I'm chatting to Chris Forian from Leicester's Ardyne Part 3. But as far as you're concerned, Billy Gilmore this weekend... The game on Sunday.
I doubt he'll play.
Graham's slow with getting them in, isn't he?
He might be on the bench, but I think may well miss out.
And he probably won't play.
It may depend on Alzate. If they line up on Alzate, they loan move somewhere else. Like apparently got a few more days for overseas, and then it might be that Gilmore will play on the bench. If they're not, then I think Alzate might take the place of the bench this weekend, and then Gilmore next weekend.
And then Gilmore comes off the bench or comes into the team. For the next game, maybe. Yes, Bournemouth might suit
it. It's a real shame that we don't have the League Cup earlier. Yeah. I don't know why they've moved that, really. It does seem odd that they've moved the third round from September to November.
Yeah,
I don't understand the logic of that, but anyway.
But one thing that seems to be a trait of Billy Gilmore's is to play really well in receiving the ball and distributing it in tight spaces. He's really good in that kind of... the Barcelona style of play, if you like. Who's the sick note at Arsenal in the past? Wilshere. That kind of a player, in a sense. He can receive the ball in tight areas. Bournemouth feels like a small pitch. I don't know if it is, but it might suit in that kind of a game. A game that's got less challenge than others might just be what we need.
And I mean, if you look at, you know, Norwich last year, they probably weren't offering him the chance, the outball for that.
Yeah.
Players weren't as good, so they were not offering the outball for that sort of situation. Whereas our players hopefully will have the knowledge, you know, the quality and that.
Well, that's the romantic music players out in the background of this pub. Peter, we've got to move on to some other mood music. The overall kind of picture of the transfer window, we listed all the names. Essentially, 27 bits of business were done by the Albion. So it was a pretty busy window. 22 of those were outgoings, 15 of which were youth-related loans of one sort or another, and all permanent moves, in the case of Zach Emerson, for example. Only five came in. Adingra has gone back out on loan, of course. We know about Gilmore, Colwell. Who else do we get in? Estupiñán. There we go, that sounded authentic. Who have I missed off? Somebody as well. There's a fifth one. I can't remember now, but maybe a smaller signing. Who knows? Anyway.
And Kiso. And Kiso, love.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, that was the stoke. It's again because a lot of the business was done at the beginning of the window. That's that. This is the other one. Enciso is another. A guy who could be an interesting prospect. He could play wide. He was playing essentially wide attacking right in the Forest Green game, and to good effect. Some good link-up play with Lamptey and the central players as well. Pacey, hungry, lots of appetite for the ball, and lots of movement.
Make me hungry if you keep about hungry and
that fight. And if only he played on loan in hungry. He looks an exciting prospect. I think he could be a mobile front line as well.
It's interesting they kept him because the suggestion was initially that he was going to go out alone, but he's they kept him. And
I think we're going to see him up front at some point in the not too distant future. Depends what the thoughts are on Undav. If Undav's starting, maybe he plays as well wider. I could see him coming into the equation possibly, especially as we might need to rotate players in the next phase of busy games. Yeah, well, there we go. Any other thoughts on the window? Obviously, Forest got up to, I think it was 21 players. They were trying to get Batshuayi, the latest team, to try and loan him, who's flopped pretty much everywhere he's been loaned to from Chelsea.
But he literally flopped when Lamptey breathed near him
at they tried to get that over the line. For some reason, it didn't happen. If they'd have got that over the line, they could have had an 11-a-side match between two Forest teams made up entirely of new signings. Insane, isn't it? Incredible. I don't think that's ever been done before, is it?
No, I don't think it has.
21 new signings.
Even Mickey Adams' first season, we didn't manage to get their place
yet. I think two or three of them actually have gone out on loan. Surprise, surprise to Olympiakos, which he's got.
It's one of them they signed from Blackpool alone for Olympiakos, didn't they? So that was an obvious transfer.
Yeah, maybe. Bowler, isn't it? Bowler. He's a really good attacking winger and goal-scoring winger for Blackpool. Shame they couldn't have loaned him back to Blackpool to keep his development going. Standard would be similar to the Greek division, I would imagine. I know Olympiakos are a big team, but they're not playing big teams every week. But obviously there's a reason he's done that, because of his connections there. But shame for Blackpool, because he's not had much time this season. And I think he only broke on the scene second half of last year. But there we go. You mentioned Alzate and the fact that there's some deals could be still done in certain places across the globe.
Including Belgium.
Including Belgium, interestingly, yeah. He didn't go to West Brom. Apparently him and Onama from Fulham were supposed to be going. And Omar was lined up earlier in the day. And it appears that West Brom are trying to partly blame us for having our resources stretched by dealing with the Gilmore deal. And we're partly to blame, they think, or seem to allude to. Whereas it seems to be the case, they're mainly to blame. There seems to be a lot of inefficiency, paperwork arriving very late or being dealt with very late.
But I think there is an argument that, sort of sound of it, that there was an issue around the fact that we wouldn't let him go officially until Gilmore went.
Yeah, it's probably more that, isn't it, rather than resources. It's actually about the timing.
And I think
Chelsea were reluctant, so that set the ball in
motion. And I think that's the part of the problem. It's a shame, because it would have been a good move for him. He's not going to get probably much first-team football. It's a shame, because I like Alzate. I think he's a really good player. And you never let us down when he comes in.
No,
but he seems to have been...
great goal against Forest Green as well, for that goal against Liverpool, of course, a couple of seasons ago. And in general, he's had some really good games. He's man of the match for the Forest Green game, I thought.
Mm.
But didn't go over the line, so a bit of a mess there. I hope that's not going to damage him psychologically or too much in terms of game time. Hopefully he can still get some games. We can play overage players in the 23s as well, so we can.
But it's not.
I know, but at least give him match fit.
I hope they lend USG if they need midfield.
Yeah, I mean that's the obvious thing to do. Yeah. To loan him to there or somewhere else.
We've only got one on loan at USG. We're well down on our average.
Average level. Yeah.
You thought you did pretty well in the Belgian league. Even if they just loaned him till Christmas and then hopefully loaned him to a Championship team second half of the season, like West Brom, if they come back in or something like that.
Yeah.
That seems like an obvious solution. And then.
Yeah. Okay.
Assuming USG need him.
Peter, on that note, we'll probably wrap it up on this section as we're chatting away in the pub. We may catch a little bit more audio later on today, depending if we run into anyone significant at Worthing, as we did on one of the previous games, Adam Hinchelwood, or someone like that. So stay tuned for that potentially. But if not, part three will be the final part, which would be the Leicester Till I Die interview. So that's coming up certainly at some point soon, possibly after you finish listening to this sentence. Peter, we're at the game, Worthing, away at St Albans, scored an absolute screamer, the man with the big hair. Sideshow Bob scored a brilliant goal. Then they got a penalty within about, a couple of minutes. I said, if he goes to the right and he saves it, that'll be that. And he did, and they did. And here we are, five more minutes later, looking like a 1-0 win.
Hopefully.
Three away wins. Three home draws. What a pattern.
Three or four.
Four today, yeah. If it happens. We've just got to see off the last couple of minutes.
Very Albion-like. They attack in a certain way that is more suited to away games. You can understand why they're like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we're into the last seconds of the game, so we'll stay with it. St Albans on the ball in their own half. Long Dyer going nowhere. And Sideshow Bob's cleared it. We've got to find out who that is. We were talking about, from an Albion point of view.
I think he was a sub.
We're talking from an Albion point of view. Kane Wills, former Albion youth player. I don't know where he's been in the meantime.
Goal kick.
I don't know where he's been in the meantime, but he's looking class, isn't he?
He did.
He
looks very like Aaron Moy, but he also plays like him as well. He looks very good on the ball.
Midfield, very good on the ball.
Yeah. I've been very impressed with Worthing today. Swords have not really any chances. Worthing have not created a lot, but they've had a lot of the ball.
Did you say St Albs?
St Albans. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. St Albs. Just a abbreviate. Why not?
Worths.
It's been a fairly even game, isn't it, overall?
But probably Worthing have more of the possession, more of the quality and that sort of thing. So,
if anyone but deserves it, it's
not us. It's been a lot of across the box and, but what a goal it was. I mean, it's a goal that deserves to win any game.
Scintillating.
If that was our match today, that would be like talked about for weeks to come.
Was that just outside the area?
Yeah.
It was hit with fierce and swerve.
We were right behind it. It swerved away from the keeper. It was brilliant. Genuinely.
It literally came directly towards us, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's an absolute...
No keeper would have saved that. It was a brilliant goal.
Champions League standard.
Goal deserves to win any game.
Exactly. Yeah. Can I also just mention... Peter, your dad handballed it blatantly during the second half as well.
I think that was first half, wasn't it? second half,
wasn't it? Whoa! Worthing have intercepted. Worthing have intercepted. They're on the attack. Oh my god, the skill! Unbelievable! Who was that? Number 16. Brilliant skill. In the end, he's given the ball away for throwing. But he did a step
that
over a lollipop. I don't know what it was called. It was brilliant. That's it, ref. Here we go. Brace yourselves, everybody. The referee is about to blow his whistle. What a win. Good team, Sir Albans, too.
Great win for Worthing.
Superb. I don't know if Peter's dad. David, do you want to have a good word?
No, good win. Well done.
It was a win well done. I think he's nailed it, really.
What a win.
Here we go. Drink in the atmosphere, everyone.
Hello,
In all this, I'm not saying.
It's a rebel.
You can feel it. It's a rebel. Brilliant ending, fantastic goal, and a brilliant penalty save. Well, from a goalkeeper point of view.
A decent penalty, I think. I think it was a poor penalty.
It was a poor penalty from a scoring point of view. For a good day out there, a 1-0 win, an excellent win away from home for Worthing at St Albans, and a penalty save in there to boot as well. In terms of their form, well, they keep drawing the home games and winning the away games. I think if they keep doing that, they'll still be in the playoff mix at the very least, so good luck to them. That's a good way to start the weekend with the Saturday match. On Sunday, tomorrow, going down to the Amex for the Leicester match. Ahead of that game, I spoke on Friday evening to Chris Foyan from Leicester Till I Die. So let's hear what he had to say about this weekend's match. Okay, so for the final part of this episode, we are delighted to welcome back to the podcast a webcaster himself, Chris Foyan, a Leicester City fan. Leicester Till I Die is the name of the pod/webcast that he does. Hello, Chris.
Good evening, Russell. How the devil are you, sir?
Oh, not too bad at all, really. Not too bad. I would ask you the same. In fact, I have done off air already, but I'm not sure you're really going to say you're in too good fooling at the moment. For reasons, well, I'm sure we'll get onto in this podcast.
Unfortunately, I think you will, yes.
Yeah. Just to start off, for anyone that didn't hear the previous one where you came on before, I think it was a couple of seasons ago, wasn't it now? Just explain a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Yeah. I'm born and bred in Leicester, but I now, having travelled around the country with various jobs, ended up on the south coast, just outside Bournemouth. So it's nice to have Bournemouth back in the division, because hopefully I might be able to get a ticket to go and see Leicester. But I've been running Leicester Till I Die now, sort of 15 years. Started out as a blog, morphed into a bigger blog that when a couple of us merged, and then it just expanded onto all different social media. And currently, the newest one is the YouTube channel, Leicester Till I Die TV.
Yeah, which in fact I'm going to subject the world to my face with just this very evening, aren't I? As
we fingers crossed, if your camera's working.
Yeah, so we'll come on to that obviously later. But no, that's great. I mean, 15 years, that's a hell of a stint in the various formats. Have you found it through the years? I mean, things have changed a lot, obviously, with technology improving. But
it's got a bit easier since I split from my wife. Because I'm I can pick and choose when. Yeah. I mean, the video channel came out through COVID, and I think a lot of people started doing things, which is understandable, you know. And there are now many, many different sort of podcasts and video casts and everything for all the clubs, let's be honest with you. Okay. And we all have our own little niches and what have you, but even when I look back on my first one and I cringe, I mean, I cringe when I look at myself now, but even back then, I mean, it was like, it looked like I was doing it in a toilet, you know, it was so small. So things have moved on, but then again, money has been spent, as they say.
You say doing it in the toilet, why do you think I've got a virtual background on here, Chris?
It would have been cheaper for me to do that.
Yeah. So so welcome back to the pod. I mean, last
just
time
thank we you having me.
Well, for this podcast anyway, it was a couple of years ago, and obviously we were all about just staying in the division, trying to get enough results to get safe as soon as possible. Meantime, you guys, I can't remember exactly where you were in the table, but you were flying pretty high, you know, you were pushing for European places of one sort or another, and I think involved in Europe as well. And obviously what's happened since is I'm looking at the table, and I had to look down much further than I thought I was going to have to.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can see why some of it's happened. I think it's just hit a peak from what I could see, the outside looking in, hit a peak. There's certain budgetary constraints, certain turnover and churn of players, and possibly things might go stale in one way or another. And then coupled with that, any team can go on a run of, in this case, four games, defeats in a row. I mean, we did worse than that last season at one point. Yeah. When you get those runs is obviously what makes this look bad at this exact moment in time early in the season. But, tell us a bit more about what, because I mean, that's my perspective from the outside looking in. Is it, is there a major concern here, or is it more just a
No. I mean, in fairness, the chairman, and I was speaking to other journalists, not that I'm a journalist, but I was talking to like people from The Athletic and from the local paper and radio station who sometimes do shows with me. And we're in debt. Every club is in debt, but we are actually one of the top five most manageable debts in European football. So we're not going to go bust tomorrow. We're not going to have to sell tomorrow, but it's all about managing your budgets. Now, last season we didn't get into Europe, but we did get to a European semi-final. So 8th place in European semi-final wasn't bad, although it was disappointing compared to where we'd been the previous two seasons. And the funny thing is, it's just come out today that PSG could end up having to pay UEFA 75 million euros in FFP charges. And it's when you read and thinking, what's that doing on the Leicester page? You know, which is on the Athletic. And when you go down, Chelsea, Manchester City, Leicester and West Ham are among 19 clubs, also including Rangers and Barcelona, competing in Europe in 21-22, who only managed to fulfil the financial requirements due to the application of COVID-19 emergency measures. And it then suddenly, it's like, you know, the sun coming out. You still think, bloody hell. And, you know, UEFA now actually have said, that their CFCB, whatever that is, I presume it's their financial arm, have asked these clubs for additional financial information and says they will be monitored closely. So we have got to watch basically what we pay. You know, we've got very high wages. We've got, we have got a lot of adequate players on high wages, probably more than they're worth. We haven't got Europe next season. And suddenly, like I say, it's starting to make a little bit of sense, you know. And we can go one of two ways. I mean, not only will sort of PSG get that, but they've also got to pay 10 million up front for a previous season's breaking of the COVID rules. Now, if your owner's an oil-rich tycoon and what have you, that's nothing. It's pocket change, let's face it. You know, he'll earn that in a couple of days with the barrels. Now, unless our owner goes home tonight, digs a hole in the back garden and strikes oil, we are not in that sort of, you know, and we never have been in that sort of group, if you like. And, you know, that's why when we did win the league, when we were in Europe, and it was a shock because, we're not in the same competitive group, if you like. So obviously they knew this was coming up. This has only just come out today, like I say, in The Athletic. So I didn't know, but it is that one of those light bulb moments. And I think now looking, you can see why we haven't gone and done much in the transfer market, which we probably needed. And Brendan said he's needed. But we've also got 27 players. You can only register 25. For your Premier League squad. So that's two players we've got over that at the start of the window that we couldn't register, but we would have to pay fairly decent wages to. Now, obviously Casper's gone and we wish him all the best. He was one of the highest earners along with Jamie Vardy. So we could do one of two things in fairness. And you've regretted asking me this question now, haven't you?
No, carry on.
We could do what Barcelona have done. You know, they bought all these players and they had to sort of twiddle the books to get them registered. And I think they ended up selling off a quarter or something of their TV channel, whatever. But we can't do that. And the other thing we could do is we could have done what Leeds did a few years ago, which was risk getting into Europe. So spend the money, hope we get into Europe. But if we don't, look what happened to Leeds. You know, they were selling players they'd bought like Rio Ferdinand for millions, for thousands in by comparison. We couldn't afford to do that either. Yeah. So no, we are not going to go bust. We're not in financial difficulty. We've got to be sensible though. And you know, it's funny because I said this to one of my co-hosts the other night on the show. Wouldn't it be funny if it proved that we were actually running the club the right way and all these other big clubs were, you know, risking it. And the problem you've got as well, you've not only got Premier League fair play, but you've got, like we've just said, UEFA fair play, and UEFA's fair play is a lot stronger than the Premier League. So that's why we've had to let some players go. Casper was the biggest. I mean, he only had a 1 year left on his contract anyway, but that was a big wage off the bill. We were able to promote from within for the goalies. We've got a third one coming in free from Cardiff. And then we expected to sell Tielemans. But Tielemans, because that's how we operate. You know, we buy these players in reasonably cheap and we sell them, like Maguire, at a very expensive profit. We don't have to, but it's how we sustain the club and carry on. Of course, nobody's come in for Tielemans this year because he's not had a very good season. So that kind of, like, buggered the plans up a little bit. And then we had all this Fofana kicking off and causing trouble in the dressing room and what have you. And Brendan spitting his dummy out the pram because he's not allowed to spend any money. Well, believe it or not, Brendan, part of your job is to manage. Not whether you have money or not, and you should be able to manage even if you don't buy players in. Let's see how good you a coach you really are. So it has been a very uneventful but still eventful transfer window and summer, if you get that. Yeah. Chris Florian, news at 10.
Well, that's a lot of good detail in there, and I think that explains a lot. I know the impression I got was that they were just being sensible with finances rather than struggling to keep up. So that is the impression I've got. I think that's what's been reported by general media. So that's fair enough. In terms of the model of operation, getting people in relatively cheap or very cheap and then selling them on for a big profit sounds very familiar to us Brighton fans, of course, because we've got into the loop quite deliberately of doing the same thing. Yeah, it's a delicate balance. It's always going to be, isn't it? Because you've got to, the recruitment's got to be good enough in the first place. And you can have some luck and some bad luck, and either with injuries or players that didn't turn out to be what they really should have been. You've got that to start with. Then you've got, as you said, you could have a player due to be sold around about the time you want to sell him, has had a season out of form or whatever it is. That could be a problem. And you never know what individual players' attitudes would be like. You could do your no dickheads policy when you recruit originally. But you could still find that someone's being a dickhead when they weren't one.
Oh, as we just have, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So there's those things to contend with. And of course, as you said, if it's a buyer's market, or if there's just, yeah, there's, if no one wants to buy players, everyone's being cagey, for example, one window, doesn't sound realistic, to be honest. But if that was the case, then again, you're then prone to those outside forces. So it is a model that works well generally if you've got all your set up right behind the scenes. And Leicester have been doing things well for quite a good number of years now, haven't they? To varying degrees of
it is, and as have you. You know, you've been we went out of business once, nearly twice. You've been down that road as well. You know, in your recent history, you were groundless. Let's be honest. So we've been there. We know what it's like.
Yeah.
And if you know, you do well. Your expectations grow. Of course they do as a fan. But do I want to risk everything and maybe end up like Derby have done, who sort of threw everything at trying to get in the Premier League? It didn't work, got points deducted. And do I want that? No. Do I want maybe finishing 17th this season, still being in the Premier League and still having a club? Oh, yes, please. I'd take that.
Yeah, because it can go that badly wrong, can't it? The Derby way, Wigan actually, who were being run really well, managed to get themselves into all sorts of problems. Dodgy owner took it over, and you know, they've managed to get that back on track actually sooner than I thought they would, to be fair. But you know, it can spiral downwards. And
God. Like I say, we've both been there, haven't we?
Yeah. And we've got, you know, probably similar sized fan bases overall. Yeah. We've got, you know, similar sized grounds. You've obviously got a richer history in terms of trophies. Well, you've won some.
Oh, recent history, let's say. Yeah. But that's the thing, it's recent. Exactly. Not so much.
Soon becomes the past, doesn't it? As many United fans will attest at the moment.
Yes, indeed.
You've got to carry on building, carry on thinking ahead, planning ahead. As you said, if you things can change. If you stand still, things go wrong. And I suppose if you've got a period of careful planning and careful finances for a while, that standing still could be how you actually drop down the table a bit. Do you think that's a little bit of the Leicester factor at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of fans are taking out on Brendan. And I've got to be honest with you, my thoughts on Brendan, a bit like the old bride's underwear on a wedding night, up and down every 2 minutes. I mean, last year I was saying, look, you know, we've had all these injuries and we had over 30 injuries all season. You know, 9 of those were defensive players. It was, you know, really, struggle. And I said, let's give him till next season. And it started this season. And look, we've got Arsenal. We've had Arsenal, Chelsea and Man United. We've got Tottenham next weekend. So that's 4 of the top 6, or the big 6 clubs, you would say, we've got in the first 6-7 weeks. Yeah. So it was always going to be a difficult start. And if I was honest, would I have expected much from them? No. You know, we've only won against Arsenal 4 times, and only one of those was actually at Arsenal. Chelsea, we've only won, beaten them about 4 times, and same with Man United. So even when we were, you know, doing well, we weren't beating these teams. But it's the performance and it's the decisions that, you know, Brendan makes. He's in the substitutions. You know, we were 1-0 down against Man United, and he did not make a substitution until the 70th minute. Man United were 1-0 up and they made a substitution on the 58th and a substitution on the 65th minute. Yeah. Now, come on, Brendan, you 1-0 down. I mean, that's where the fans are getting frustrated.
Yeah, yeah. The other factors you can understand, but it's what they're doing in the interim. It's interesting. I wouldn't say at all in terms of size or facility, but looking at Bournemouth, obviously, Brendan Rodgers, Scott Parker have both done something similar, which is to say they needed more resources. Clearly, there was other issues going on behind the scenes at Bournemouth for Scott Parker to get sacked after four games, three of which sound pretty similar games to your games. And, okay, they managed to win the first match of the season, but they've there's more at work there. But all in all, though, you can still possibly get a bit more out of it. You can try and do a bit more, at least. And I haven't really looked at Bournemouth games, but looking at yours, and from what you've just said, it sounds as if not enough proactivity is going on in match with Brendan there, which is where maybe, do you suppose Leicester fans are looking at that, but also looking at the fact that he's been there for some time. I don't know how long it is now, Chris.
He's never been at a club as long as he's been with us. I think it's four. I mean, he had third season syndrome at Liverpool, and all the Liverpool fans said, oh, wait till you get, you know, and then he had the same at Celtic.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, these managers are well paid for what they do. If they get sacked, I have no sympathy with them because they get more in payoff than I will receive in my whole lifetime. So I have no sympathy for any manager that they get sacked at this level. Don't get me wrong. It's different as you go down the pyramid, but at this level, the managers are well looked after when they're sacked and will walk into another job. We know that straight away. I mean, Scott Parker, I live just outside Bournemouth. It wasn't that one game. Like you said, there was a lot going on behind the scenes. Brendan's got to be very careful. Brendan, he's coming up with excuses and blaming everybody else but himself. Mm. You know, he turns around and says, right, why are we not playing a left-footed defender in the left centre-back role? We're playing a fourth-choice centre-back who's right-footed in that role. He says, well, I'm not playing Soyuncu because I'm only playing people that are committed to the club. And he has been linked with leaving. But he's playing Tielemans week in, week out. Who's wanted to go away, you know, leave. I mean, yeah. Brendan, he does talk BS so much. You know, he said, I think it was against Arsenal or something, that we weren't experienced enough, apparently. And yet, we then lost to Southampton the following week, who had the youngest squad in the Premier League since 2017 of any team. You know, of the team that beat Southampton 9-0, 10 players that were in that squad, and not just the starting lineup, the whole squad, 10 players are still in the squad today. So when you look at that, he's actually made us worse season in, season out. Arteta, for example, has made us look better. You know, he's got Arsenal looking better every season. Brendan's the other way. He's got us looking worse every season. And the fans are getting fed up with it. He came in and took over Claude Puel because Claude Puel basically was playing such boring football. That was more exciting than what Brendan Rodgers is playing now.
The word entitlement gets bandied around a lot in the Premier League. My impression of Leicester isn't that that's one of those clubs. So it sounds like these are reasonable objections and that you're not asking for the world. You're just asking for, based on what you have got resource-wise, a steady position in the table, which for me, looking at Leicester, is perfectly realistic at the least. And obviously, in happens to be good times, it can be better. So I guess, obviously, if results carry on this way, there's going to be a breaking point. But do you think that there's more, just a lot of disharmony, just vibes under the scenes at the moment, rather than out and out calls for him to go? Or do you think people want him to go just for the way, the general direction of travel overall?
When we look at the squad we've got, and there has been a lot of, with Fofana leaving and the way in which he left, you know, 5 months after signing an extension for his contract. And Chelsea, can I just say, you think you've got him for till 2027. Good luck with that. but so he's, and we know that went on obviously weeks before because of agents and what have you. So there was a lot of disruption in the dressing room. But that said, going back to when we lost to Nottingham Forest in February in the FA Cup, And he came out and he blamed the players. He blames everybody else except Brendan.
Yeah.
Brendan is never at fault. And he has been quite vocal against the owners. Now, our owners are fantastic. Yeah. And unfortunately, we had the crash where we lost, you know, Richai, rest in peace. We would not doubt their commitment to the club, what they've done for the club, not just the club, the whole county. He has come out top in the, the Man United, programme and explained it all. It would have been more helpful if he'd maybe said that at the start of the summer.
Yeah.
But we know that the Thais, you know, the way they do things in Thailand is they're never questioned by the media. You know, the media, why are you doing that? So I'm going to stand it a little bit, but Brendan has got to be careful that you sometimes look at him and thinking, you're trying to get sacked. Because he's, you know, you do not complain about your boss in public as much as he does. If you were onto social media and was complaining about your boss as much, you know, you'd have you in the office. You'd be on a written warning, if not out the door. He's got to be very careful. And unfortunately, at the moment, not many fans would come to his defence because it is boring football.
Well, maybe that is what he's doing. Maybe he is trying to get sacked.
Well,
because the payoff,
it wouldn't surprise a lot of fans.
Compared with resigning from the role, for example, you know.
Really gets his payoff if he's sacked, doesn't he?
Yeah. Who knows? But it's a bit of an anomaly. I must admit, some fans that I chatted to, both Brighton fans and general fans, when they said, right, this season, what do we think is going to happen with the bottom half of the table? Obviously, the usual thing, the promoted teams are going to have to be careful and whatever else.
Yeah.
One or two other people threw in, as they always do, Southampton, or maybe they'll slip this year. And obviously Everton, who are a lot of problems.
That was me with Southampton, yeah.
And there's no coincidence that where they are, they're struggling already. I don't think either Frank Lampard or Everton have got very good prospects at the moment.
I genuinely think
they might go down for the first time since, well, they've been in there longer than Liverpool, haven't they?
Yeah.
And Man United and Spurs and all the others. So that could be interesting. They're genuinely in danger because when I look at it, I think, well, Forest has spent shed loads of money. There's a hell of a lot of assimilation between teammates to do there. I'm not sure how that's going to go. It's so crazy and off the scale. Who knows? Fulham look like they're a little bit more switched on than last time. Bournemouth are definitely going to go down. But you're looking at who else? You think, well, Villa? Maybe. But then maybe they could get their act together. Same with Leeds. I think Leeds could be a danger. Southampton could be a danger. But there's no clear-cut 3, 4, 5 clubs that you don't have to worry too much because they're there. This season looks a bit up in the air at the moment. So
there's been some weird results, hasn't there?
Yeah.
Already, yeah.
And, you know, it's a long season. We've only played 5 games.
Yes.
As I said, a run of 4 defeats, loads of teams have that and don't go down. So I don't think there's anything to debate at this stage, but you've obviously got to get things back on track.
The interesting thing is we've got the World Cup coming up.
Yeah, which is going to totally split the season in two.
It is. And you're going to have a lot of owners at the start of that World Cup looking at where they are in the table, what's going on.
Yeah.
Because if, for example, we sacked Rodgers or you sacked Potter or whatever, we've then got 4 weeks to find another manager, bring him in, and he'll have time to get used to the players that haven't gone away to play in the World Cup.
Yeah.
They then got a couple of games back, and then they've got the January transfer window. So that would be an ideal time if you're going to sack your manager.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting. And also the refresh for the players that aren't involved in the World Cup is going to be interesting too.
Yes.
So players that may have got a manager sacked, then get a refresh time. Not only do you get the new manager bounce cliche thing, but you know, you might have that, but you've also got fresher players maybe because, they're unlikely to get called up. I'm conscious of time. We've got to wrap it up in a moment, but, in terms of, just a couple of quick questions for you. I mean, first of all, just to mention the head-to-head record, by the way, between us. At the moment, we've won 14. There's been 8 draws. You've won 19. So whatever happens at the weekend, you've still got the edge on us on that. any prediction for the weekend? Because obviously at some point you'll turn this round, there'll be an upset.
Well, the funny thing is, I also have a head-to-head ready for my show, but mine's only Premier League games.
That's interesting. Go on, yeah.
Well, we've played 10, we've drawn 3, You've won 1, and we've won 6. 3 of our wins were away, and your 1 win was at home. I find it hard to predict against my team, to be honest with you. I really do. But I have gone for, I've got to go for Leicester. And this is no disrespect to Brighton, but when you look at, and I know football's not played on paper, but I would have predicted us to beat Brentford, I would have predicted us to beat Southampton, and I would have predicted us to beat yourselves. And probably lost to Arsenal, Chelsea, and I went for a draw against Man United. And I'm sure when you look at it as well, Leicester are one of those teams that you look at and think, yep, this is a game we can win. If you were to play Manchester City this weekend, you'd probably be thinking, oh God, how many is Haaland going to get, you know? But so that's not disrespecting you as a club. You know what I mean? But yeah, I have gone 2-0 for Leicester because this is a big game because Brendan said, you know, once the transfer window shut and we can forget that. We know where we are. There's, you know, nothing we're worrying about. Are we losing? We know where we're going to stand. So he's made all these promises. This really is almost a must win, if you like.
You've got to, as you said, you've got to turn that round soon, haven't you?
We're not going to turn it around next week against Tottenham.
They're getting into form, aren't they now? Kane in particular. But, the thing with Brighton is it's a funny one at home because our record, I think it was the third or fourth best in the division last season away from home. Home form, particularly due to a couple of long spells with draws, long spell with defeats, isn't so good. And this season, although we finished last season quite well, we obviously thrashed Man U, which was very satisfying, and came behind, which is another unusual thing for us to do at home, and beat West Ham. But this season, we've started in the same manner as the typical thing for last year, which is dominated against Newcastle, should have beaten them by a couple of goals, 0-0. Leeds, same as against Leeds last season, dominated, should have beaten them 2-0, managed to beat them 1-0. So we still struggle at home. So anything's possible. I think that particular cycle might break again. So I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Brighton, actually. I've got last week's wrong, the Fulham game. But I have done quite well with predictions. We'll see which one the recent form or the overall form pays out on this one for me. But
Well, in the prediction league, I've got 1 point from 5 games.
But, I mean, quite honestly, I've got no idea with this one because Leicester are capable of a result at any point. We are very unpredictable at home. I think we're good away. I'd be more confident playing you at your place than at ours, actually, despite the Premier League record between us. But who knows? But it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. The other thing to quickly mention, talking about where the bottom of the table is, the Midland sides, in general, struggling this season so far. It's interesting. It's obviously just a coincidence, I'm assuming, but there's got to be a bit of a rivalry as well between you guys in terms of trying to finish top of the tree in that regard.
We've never really had much of a rivalry with Wolves and Villa. The rivalry is there because they were the only other Midlands teams that have been in the Premier League recently.
That's more Derby and Forest.
It is. And Forest obviously are back this season. They've bought virtually every football player that's available. I just want to finish above them. That's the thing. Okay. Can I just say, I did do well with the 6-0 versus, that was the one I got right. I went 6-0 for Man City versus, Tottenham Forest. So well done, Man City. We love you.
Brilliant. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, on that note, I'll bid you farewell. We're going on to your one next, aren't we? So
we are on ours. Yeah. I'm going to start and just go through some bits and then yourself and my colleague will jump on 20 past 7-ish. Well, we'll talk, mention and talk all the same again.
Yes, we will, yes. So, Chris, thank you very much for joining me, and I will speak to you again soon, very soon.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Cheers, as always. Bye. Cheers,
thank you. Bye-bye. Sports Social
Podcast Network. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.